It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 125 of Sports Day Plus. In mere seconds, I'm spending the hour with Kevin Dunn discussing a variety of topics, sports, and otherwise. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave. And do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. And at KevinDunn01 is where you can find my best friend and a guy who joins me every Tuesday for the hour. It is the great Kevin Dunn. What's up, Katie? How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Good sports weekend. You know, it's funny, we were laughing. I've had this conversation with multiple buddies, but like we have gut issues all of a sudden. And I think mine was actually a stomach bug, but gut issues that you've had, buddies and I have had. And so I was out of commission for a little while, which is probably a good thing. But good weekend and watched a ton of different sports, too.
Yeah, fortunately, we all got a three-day weekend. So if we were struggling, we didn't have to worry about going in yesterday because it was Memorial Day. And I certainly hope everybody had a good Memorial Day. Unfortunately for me, my gut issues coincided with my family making a return trip to Chicago for the first time in 6 years. The last time we were in the Windy City, yes, drink up. Last time we were in the Windy City was the summer of 2018. We had a trip planned for the summer of 2020, but then, you know, COVID. So this is our first time back to visit my wife's family and come try and enjoy the city practically since my son was born. So it's cool for them to get to come back as more conscious human beings, I guess. And having to deal with the gut issues is no easier when you're in a place like Chicago where it's very easy to indulge on both food and beverage.
Yeah, I was able to go all smoothie and arugula salad and just kind of hang out and not do much. But you were in that spot where obviously you want to eat well there, and we'll probably get into that. But yeah, it was kind of funny. We were talking about Calvin and Viv, and you know, your wife Justine's from there, born and raised there. They've got half their side from there, but they don't really know Chicago. And so there's not many times when a buddy of mine would be like, "Hey, I've got two younger kids. Do you want to go on the trip with us?" Now with Calvin and Viv, I would, because I love them that much and they're that well behaved. But I really wanted to be a fly on the wall and see the reaction to Sears Tower and John Hancock and downtown and all that. That probably was pretty cool for you living there.
It definitely is. And we're making sure to cater the trip to things that they can enjoy too. And that's not to say that we may not visit the Art Institute, let's say, or go to things that are similarly, if not a little bit more enjoyable for adults. But like we spent Memorial Day yesterday at Lincoln Park Zoo, which is a pretty cool zoo. It's also free. I mean, they charge you out the wazoo for a variety of things once you're at the zoo, whether you're talking parking or food or plenty of other stuff. But we had a blast just walking around the zoo for a couple of hours. And they're at that age now, I can see it, especially with my daughter, where they're boring of the zoo a little bit faster than if they're like 4, 5, 6 years old. But they're still right. Young enough that they were able to enjoy that facet of things. But quite honestly, they're looking forward to things like the planetarium and the Museum of Science and Industry and maybe going to the Field Museum and checking out the Bean and Millennium Park. And the thing that they're most excited about, which I'm curious to see where the reality of them being in the situation is versus that preconceived excitement, is going on the architecture tour. Like they just want to be on a boat in the Chicago River, and they may not realize what they're getting into in terms of all the potential learning that's going to be happening with them with the PA guy talking about all the buildings that we're going to be passing by.
Yeah. So, I mean, for people that don't know my background, my dad's born and raised there. So I spent every summer almost a month there. And to really spend time with his family, which I couldn't do during the school year. And so I went on that tour, I don't know, 10 times. I think I stopped when Dave Matthews went on tour the second time.
Yeah, when the Dave Matthews Band decided to to dump all the excrement out of their tour bus onto an architecture tour in the Chicago River. That was a low point for that entire body of water.
Yeah. and I was probably 5 years after that in high school when that happened. So I'd been doing it younger, but I went on a thing a lot. I mean, that's a pretty fun tour. Chicago is great training wheels. I say training wheels, it's probably number two, but to get used to a metropolis. So, you know, when I moved to New York, I'd never moved there, and the assimilation was a lot easier because Chicago was a second home for me. So, and I was just really confined to the downtown area, which was very safe back then. So it was the Mag Mile, and that's where my grandma lived. And so I knew all that area, would walk around. It was back when parents or grandparents would just let you walk around by yourself. And, you know, I look back with fond memories, but the architectural tour was really cool. And one that even when I was older going by there thinking, you know what, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think they'll appreciate it. I believe we're going to be doing that one tomorrow, and they should get at least some mild enjoyment out of it. See, here's the thing for me with pretty much any of these things that you go and visit, any museum, the zoo, the architecture tour, you get to that 45-minute to hour mark is when the attention span really starts to taper off, and I would assume that they're going to be the same way. So the architecture tour goes for an hour and 15 minutes. I imagine with about a half hour left, they're going to be asking when this thing is over with so they can get back on dry land. And look, Calvin thought when we were telling him about the architecture tour over the weekend, he's like, oh, cool. Do I need to wear my swimsuit so we can jump in the water? And it's like, buddy, the Chicago River is one of the last bodies of water you want to jump in. I mean, that is filled with more St. Patrick's Day green dye waste from the industrial plants lining the river and Dave Matthews Band excrement than any of us want to admit. So, no, sadly, you will not be getting in that water. We can find a swimming pool, may even let you stick your toes in Lake Michigan, although that's going to be pretty cold right now. But the Chicago River is no go.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of for Austin people. Would you rather, you know, it's funny now, I mean, it blows my mind, but all the new people here are on kayaks and in the in-town lake. And I'm like, dude, that's full of duckweed and crap. You know, you'd rather be in Lake Austin than town lake. You'd much rather take the architectural tour. And if you're going to get wet, Calvin, do it when they break out of the river and break out. And you're kind of near the coast. You can body surf in, you know.
Yeah, much better option. Yeah, you're right, by the way. The fact that people are getting all the way into Town Lake is just disgusting. Like, there needs to be some sort of warning given out at these places where the longboards are being rented for folks that this is not sanitary water that you're getting into here. You are running the risk of serious illness just by dipping your body in that nastiness.
Yeah, and maybe it was 80s, you know, just hysteria and some type of phobia, but we always heard duckweed, and there'd be a couple of drunk guys who would go in there late at night and get swallowed up by duckweed, which is, I was always told, the equivalent of quicksand and water, and would end up dying or drowning in there. And it blows me away, like all the people that are in that body of water now. So give them credit. I mean, you know, the new generation is as much as they are safety conscious. You know, they're on a scooter with no helmet going down Lamar the other way, and they're doing, you know, and then they're swimming in Town Lake. I'm like, you know, you're not that big.
Yeah, that's it's the whole concept. Now I realize we're past the COVID era, but it's the whole concept during COVID. And I know comedians have talked about this, where you've got somebody riding a bike down the street wearing a face mask but not wearing a helmet. It's like, I think your priorities are out of whack here. Same thing with the scooters, same thing with getting on the longboards and then taking a dip into Town Lake. It's like, I don't think you actually understand what's happening here.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you, because you and I are both independent libertarians that will laugh at both sides. And we've heard certainly the fuss on one side that is all these big cities are falling apart. And by the way, there's clearly a lot that's there. So I'm not saying that's not the case. I'm just curious to talk to people in San Francisco, New York, Chicago. I know, how bad is it? In New York, they told me, super liberals told me on the other side of what I was talking about, hey, it's not good. How bad is Chicago so far?
It's a great question. And I'm going to hold on to that question until we get to the other side of this commercial break. He is Kevin Dunn joining me for the full hour. On the other side, I will tell you just how much of disrepair Chicago is in right now, or maybe it's starting to swing the other direction. You just have to stay tuned to find out here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Kevin Dunn for the full hour here on Sports Day Plus. I am Trey Elling, broadcasting thanks to the magic of technology from the Windy City. That's right, I am in Chicago with my family right now. Drink up. Prior to the commercial break, Kevin had asked me, because Chicago had taken a weird turn starting with the early stages of COVID, much like a San Francisco did, or New York, or Seattle, or Portland, or name a city on the West Coast, I guess, where it became much...
Austin
had a little bit of that, yeah, but Texas thankfully balanced it out a little bit. But it took an unfortunate turn to where it became a place that you did not necessarily want to go to, certainly not with your family. So what is Chicago like now, at least in my limited experience, having been here since Saturday? I got to say, I think it's taken a turn back towards the better. It's not all the way there just yet.
That's
but
great to hear. Great
yeah,
to hear.
It doesn't feel unsafe like people were describing it to me a couple of years ago. And so I'm happy about that, because this is a city that I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for. I moved here at the age of 31, stuck around for nearly 7 years, and really developed into the human that I am today as a result of the time that I got to spend in Chicago, during a great time to be in Chicago too, by the way. You experienced that in New York City on a couple of different occasions. You got New York at a great time both times, and big cities go through ebbs and flows just like everywhere else. It's just that the ebbs of a big city get really ugly when you're talking about a breakout in crime, and of course it coinciding with the defund slash abolish the police movement, and just some total hysteria by the leaders who were supposedly acting in the name of keeping their taxpaying citizens safe, but sadly doing the exact opposite for a couple of years. Those people have now been voted out en masse, by the way.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, I mean, activists, severe extreme activists on either side should be voted out. And yep, they've got bullhorns. And we need to, as the 84% on either side, whatever that is, 82% combined, need to shout them down. Yep. We have jobs and families and lives and aren't hysterical 24/7, 365 about some stupid effing issue compared to what's really at play. But we need to step up and be like, no, I'm taking time out of the kids' schedule here and be like, no, you shut up on both sides. And they need to be voted out. And that's the same in, you know, I like my Sistersville, Alabama, and they're doing stuff there. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Now, that may be a little different than New York City, San Francisco, with that much population. If there's 800 people who want to live in a city like that, go for it, I guess. But I think it's important that we step up and actually, you know, tell them, no, it's too much. And I'm glad to hear that's kind of been turned around. I hope it happens in Chicago. I think San Francisco probably has the longest haul. Yeah. You know, New York was like that in when my dad lived there training for Merrill Lynch in the late 70s. It was what it was now with crime and everything, but with the garbage strike.
Yeah, that lasted through the 80s, too, until Rudy Giuliani instituted the broken windows policy and started paying attention to a lot of those little details. And that really helped to clean the city up from when he implemented that all the way up until a few years ago.
Right. And so, I mean, I know people on the left would tell me, well, that was too far. And I'm like, well, but for that city and the population and the density, it worked. And I would say the same to the right, maybe about gun laws that should be different in New York City than they are other places
right
in America. Right. You know, to where like there's a way every little city, especially big cities with that type of density, and population, you know, they need different rules. But I that's really good to hear, because, you know, I really don't have any family there left now. But when they were there, they were older and had lived there forever. And they're like, it's getting bad. And like I said, the people in New York I've known are just like, it's getting really bad. So, let's turn it around, because those are three of the best cities in the world.
I've talked to some New York people recently, actually mostly stand-up comedians, who tell me that New York is getting better. And then I'll ask them, I'm like, all right, cool. So the homelessness is getting better, subways are getting better. And they're like, those things are actually still pretty bad. Like the subway, I had somebody tell me last week, TJ Miller, actually, he's a pretty well-known comedian. He's like, I'm a big dude, so I'm not too threatened on the subway. But yeah, my wife, she's petite and she doesn't feel comfortable traveling on the subway after a certain point in the night. He's like, yeah, there's homeless people all over the street that we live on too. And I was talking to one of them the other day and I'm asking him what his drug of choice is. And he's like, cocaine. And I'm like, is it cocaine or crack? And he's like, crack is cocaine. He's like, all right, well, I guess you kind of have a point there. But yeah, you wonder about people who live there. It's not really turning a blind eye necessarily.
Yeah, Trey Cocaine, he would have been in the financial district.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily turning a blind eye, but it is becoming accustomed to it to where it isn't maybe quite as bothersome for you. It's like thinking back to the Blitzkrieg, let's say, of World War II, where people in London were having to deal with bombings pretty much each and every day. Well, they eventually got on with their lives. And so they are going to work and they're going out and meeting their friends and socializing and trying to hook up. And then you would get an air siren because there was a bombing coming in and everybody would take their positions. It would end and they would go back about their lives too. Something similar is probably happening in big cities now. I do truly believe after walking around Chicago for a few days that Chicago is going back in the right direction. At the very least, you're right. San Francisco has a much longer way to go. Although I know the people of that city have started to get fed up with it all too. It's just a matter of whether it's gone too far down that road to come back now.
Yeah, I just wonder who would legislate all that to destroy a city and drop the market value of real estate and then gobble it up and then resell it in 10 years.
Yeah, it's quite the swindle, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, who knows, but glad to hear it. So glad you're having fun. You guys going to a game? What else you have going on? You went to Avec last night, right?
Yeah, I went to Avec last night. It's my favorite restaurant. Hadn't been there.
Boy, that place was so good. You and I ate way too much there, but man, it was so worth it.
Oh, I chose not to eat all day just so I would have maximum room in my stomach to eat. And I'm glad I did because the quality is still up there. I don't know if you've seen any of the Hulu series or FX series, The Bear. It's like based in a Chicago restaurant, but they visit a bunch of places at one point in season two to try and get a sense for what they want to do for this new restaurant that they're putting together. Well, I guess Avec was showcased in that series, and so it really boosted the popularity of the place. But the quality is still great, thankfully. Paul Kahan has a number of really good restaurants around town. Everything from Blackbird to the Publican to Big Star in Wicker Park. But in my opinion, Avec is the best of the bunch. They actually have a River North location now too, but we went to the original in West Loop. So that was great. We've got some good things on tap for a little bit later on. We're going to Coal Fire Pizza, which I'm excited about. My favorite Neapolitan pizza on the planet. Yes, I'm in Chicago, but I'm going for Neapolitan pizza. Chicago style pizza isn't pizza. You eat it with a fork and a knife. It's more lasagna than it is pizza. Let's call it what it is, pizzagna, and move on. But coal fire pizza.
Yeah, but Chicagoans usually, if they eat a pizza, it's not even Neapolitan or Chicago style. It's more the square thin slice.
That bar
right?
style pie. Yeah, that bar style pie is as popular. I'm trying to think of the Rosati's is a place that people love to go for that bar style pie. And they even sell the bar-style pies at the Chicago-style places, too, if I'm not mistaken. It's just that soupy, thick Chicago-style pizza is what always gets the attention.
Right. Couple things. One, glad to hear that The Bear, the show you're watching, was not what I thought it was. And that's a next show about something else. and then also, two, glad to hear Avec's still doing well. Paul Kahan is one of the country's best chefs. I would say, I mean, you would know better than I would, but with Stephanie Izard and Rick Bayless, probably the three best chefs in Chicago right now. I'm sure I'm missing four or five because Chicago is that big of a city and that good of a city.
Grant Ashatz, sorry, I forget how you pronounce
his last
name.
I'm sorry. I kind of missed on the world's number one. Sorry about Grant there.
That's the only other one I was really thinking of. Because
but that really goes to show you about Chicago. And Bourdain always said this. Chicago's been playing catch up to no one. Chicago, you know, I would say Chicago may be my favorite city of all time. New York is the best big city, a little bit bigger than Chicago. And San Francisco is just its own different world. New Orleans is like that. Vegas is like that. America has a lot of great cities. We have to preserve them, keep them. Seattle, Portland, Minneapolis, Austin, Miami. You go through it. And we got to make sure that we protect them to some degree and make sure they just don't burn up, right?
No, that's true. And we haven't been down to the Mag Mile just yet. I'll be curious to check that out tomorrow to see just how boarded up all of that still is, because that took the turn that a lot of San Francisco has, where
didn't a quarter of the retail leave?
Yeah, it was something like that. The Nike store was no more because it got completely busted down the summer of 2020 when there was a lot of ransacking going on up and down the Mag Mile. And I was under the impression, at least as of a year or two ago, that a lot of those businesses had not come back. So much of the Mag Mile is empty now. It's no longer that luxury shopping or the ability to go window shop in a place like the Nike store. But I'll be able to tell you for sure when we talk about things next week. But I think that what that did here in this city, because the city didn't lose a ton of people like California lost a ton of people or New York lost a ton of people. But what it did is it pushed people more into the neighborhoods, which Chicago has always been a very neighborhood-oriented city too. So if anything, maybe it strengthened the neighborhoods, although the neighborhoods also dealt with a high crime rate for a while there. And maybe some of that is still going on and I just haven't been exposed to it yet, or I haven't talked to the right people about it because it is somewhat sporadic. It's not the smash and grab that we saw on the Mag Mile, but people as of a year ago, I want to say, we're still having to be very careful about getting carjacked.
Augusta
and Ukrainian Village.
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, fast forward to Trey getting carjacked in 2 days and this whole story changes.
Oh, boy, that will be a very bad thing if that happens, because that's my father-in-law's car. And then I'm going to feel bad
because I'm on the hook for it. So here we go.
That's right. He is Kevin Dunn joining me here on Sports Day Plus for the full hour. We have spent the first half of today's show not talking sports, but guess what? We are going to discuss sports coming up. That does include Bill Walton passing away yesterday. And how about the Longhorn softball team taking care of business with their backs against the wall against A&M over the weekend? All that coming up here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back here on Sports Day Plus, I am joined by the great Kevin Dunn for the full hour. Spent the first half of our show talking about my family vacation to Chicago, just what the city is like, some good food that we've had, also a trip to the Lincoln Park Zoo. There will be more stories coming up, maybe next week with Kevin. I did visit a Chuck E. Cheese's for the first time in about 30 years, so I'm going to have to recap that at some point. But wow, we do need to talk a little bit of sports, Kevin, because Bill Walton died yesterday, which it took me by surprise. I didn't realize that he was sick with cancer. I had the pleasure of speaking with him about a year ago about the 30 for 30 series that ESPN put out, the 2 or 3 part series, I want to say. But Bill Walton is one of those guys who became much more known as an analyst, as a character covering basketball over the years. But at one point in time, he was looked at as one of the all-time great basketball players coming out of UCLA and then really starting his NBA career, too.
He's one of the top three college basketball players of all time. And this is where I think our generation may have been the last to be able to look at people before you were born, before you saw them. And to once you get film, and we couldn't get film as much as kids can now, but we could, and look up stuff and listen to people who really know their stuff, who watched them. And Bill Walton was, with Lou Alcindor, probably David Thompson, Pete Maravich, and Theron Leitner, he's one of the top five college basketball players ever. You can easily argue number one. He was that good. He had so many foot problems that he had issues in the pros, did win in 77 with Portland, and was the MVP, and was that good. So kind of interesting how history looks at how good he was. But we know him more now as the guy, because we knew him, Trey, when we were kids, as the guy with the Celtics, and then with Snapper Jones in the 90s doing NBC Finals, right?
Yeah, Snapper Jones, boy, what a blast from the past there. Yeah, I mean, I know him more as an analyst than I do as a player. Vaguely remember him as a member of the Celtics, but obviously his best basketball was played with UCLA and then with the Portland Trailblazers too. And he is a guy who is a great example of someone that if his career hadn't gotten so derailed by injuries, he would have ended up as one of the all-time greats. And you just wonder, you and I were talking about this earlier, I don't want to steal your thunder necessarily, but you wonder if he had access to modern medicine and the incredible healing techniques that exist here in 2024, if his career path as a player might have been drastically different?
You know, it's a great question, and I think that probably one he's asked, I mean, knowing how, or did ask, that knowing how introspective he was, but I don't know. I mean, he had 39 surgeries, and any time I heard bad feet, even as a kid in the 80s, when my dad would talk about it, he'd talk about Bill Walton. So Walton was like 86-4, whatever it was at UCLA, three-time Naismith Player of the Year, 77 MVP, Finals MVP, win for the Blazers. So he even showed it in the pros. This is not Adam Morrison, who's dominating in college. Not that Morrison was ever near Walton in college, but and then his total flame out. He was good in the pros. It was about injuries. 39 surgeries. I mean, I remember watching the documentary you're talking about and also listening to your interview. And there had to be so many malpractice suits involved there to have that many surgeries. I mean, they told him his rookie year, you're not hurt, and his foot was broken. And then they're doing wrong surgeries on his feet. It's amazing for the 86 Celtics, as good as he was. And that was why he was so good. He had great vision. He had incredible intelligence for the game. You know, the funny thing is for people, the young people now, 23, are listening. They're like, dude, Bill Walton was a joke. I'm going to go J.J. Redick. He was a handyman, you know. Bill Walton was joking. You know, Joker before Joker was around.
You're right about that. I'm just looking at the Celtics numbers now. He wasn't playing heavy minutes, obviously, those last couple of years with the Celtics, but he was still a very effective player, especially that first year where he's shooting 56% from the field. He's able to distribute the basketball around like he was, get rebounds here and there, block some shots. His impact in terms of the injuries is still so prevalent that anytime I see a big guy who moves around really well like that, especially one who's slight of frame, Wimby is a great example of this. I'm like, he is a foot injury waiting to happen. Like, that's why I'm not as bought right in on Wimby, as freakish as his talent is. And I agree. Look, I've watched the highlights and I see just how insane and just how uniquely he moves for a guy his size. It just feels like a matter of time before he's going to suffer that similar fate, even though medicine is much better now. Now, Yao Ming is another recent example of a guy who was really big and moved around pretty well before the foot injuries caught up with him. But, man, Bill Walton, he's example number one, just because I didn't even realize the 39 foot surgeries. I mean, that is insane. You're right about the medical malpractice. That really sucks for him. That
clearly it's way past the fact, so you couldn't sue anyone now, but something was misdiagnosed or went wrong, correct, with 39 surgeries?
He missed 3 of 4 seasons with foot injuries. Absolutely something was misdiagnosed. Or maybe it was just one of those things because he's in that era where it's like, it's maybe not necessarily rub some dirt on it because he is dealing with those surgeries, but it was somebody who was probably representing himself as a doctor who was fancying himself as much more qualified to diagnose the injury or perform the surgery than he actually was.
And if I remember, I haven't watched the special in a long time. If I remember, it was early on, kind of you had said this off the air, you know, rub some dirt on it kind of back in the day. And they're like, you know, are you being a wimp and not playing through this? And he's got a broken foot. And so, yeah, I mean, something went wrong, but there's that mix we talk about. I mean, Ronald Acuna just tore another ACL. We're never been in a better time for nutrition, strength conditioning, strength training, all that. And sometimes it just happens, and sometimes you're built that way. So not to say he was not going to have foot issues, but his went to a crazy degree where he turned into that guy for the Celtics we knew. But even then, he could pass with Bird, McHale, and Parrish, and Ainge, and DJ, and those guys. He knew the game so well that even with his total skill level and what he did so well at UCLA in Portland, which was using both hands and just had an incredible touch, he went 21 of 23 or was it 22 of 24 against Memphis State in the championship game as the MVP and scored 44 and had 13. Bill Walton was a stud.
That is wild. And by the way, his second to last year with Boston, he was sixth man of the year. His stats weren't eye-popping necessarily, but people were acknowledging how valuable he was to that franchise in a year where they were able to win a championship. I think about basketball, and it's a sport where they are often trying things to help guys get back to good. And this speaks to some other guys who whose careers were cut short because the wrong sort of medical treatment was carried out on them. The microfracture surgery from the 1990s and early 2000s. Think about some of the talented players that took down in an effort to get their knee stronger. It completely ruined them. Brandon Roy is the primary example that comes up to me, but there were a number of talented players who did the microfracture surgery and thought it was something that was going to help extend their career, but it did the opposite, sadly.
I've heard so many crazy stories as long as I've been doing this. You probably have too. One of them I heard was BJ Tyler, who we love. BJ Tyler, for younger UT basketball fans, is one of the best UT basketball players of all time.
Yes, so he sick. He was post BMW.
Post BMW, early 90s, transferred from DePaul and Joey Meyer and that whole deal, and was on really good teams here and was Southwest Conference Player of the Year. I know that sounds lame to you, but everything does. So, but no, I mean, he was a really damn good player, and he was a first round draft pick, I believe, with the Sixers, right?
I had forgotten that. You're right, though. Yeah.
Yeah. And fell asleep on the training table with ice on his knee, and it froze all of his nerves.
What?
I don't think I ever told you that. Yeah. It's there are stories like that. And it's like anything, though. You also hear, you know, what happened to Tim? Tim died of a concussion. What happened? He was taken out the garbage and tripped over the, or tripped on some ice and hit the, you know, front of the car and hit him right in the perfect part of the temple, and he's dead. It's like, what?
Yeah, I hear that's how Brian Greasy injured his knee a few years ago.
Yeah, well, now, well, that's where the Brian Greasys use the Tims of the world and saw that story in the paper and goes, I got it. You know, we're good.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I am just reading this BJ Tyler. I mean, it is on his Wikipedia page right now.
Is it on?
That is such a shame. Yeah,
I think I talked to BJ about it, but like that's one of those where I don't know, as like an ex-mafia guy and now non-mafia guy, what I can talk about. I'm like Ray Liotta in Phoenix, you know, getting the paper. I'm not sure I can tell my neighbor exactly what's going on.
He played 1 year in Philadelphia, 55 games, 8 games started, 15 minutes per game, and he could just never get that explosiveness back after the nerve damage that was suffered after he fell asleep with a pack of ice on his ankle. Dude,
yeah,
that sucks.
No, I mean, it was the ankle. Okay. Yeah. I knew it was one of those, and like it just, you know, killed the nerves. So
it's a shame. You mentioned Mickey Mantle earlier when you and I were talking on the phone. He's another guy who would have greatly benefited from modern technology helping him to get over the catastrophic knee injury that ultimately ended his career.
Yeah, no, he hit the drain, and clearly, you know, part of Mickey's game was running. His power was incredible. So, I mean, he was Mickey Mantle, so he did pretty much everything well. But, yeah, changed his game. Mickey would have been and was the first to admit there was other stuff in his life that didn't help out with that he would have had to curb outside of having new knee surgeries at that time.
That is true. He is Kevin Dunn joining me for the full hour here on Sports Day Plus. Coming up, we finish off with some women's sports. That's right. The UT softball team mounted an impressive comeback to knock off A&M over the weekend to punch their ticket to, is it Oklahoma City? I don't even remember.
OKC. Come on, man.
All right. Well, yeah, sure.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of Sports Day Plus. I am joined by my best friend Kevin Dunn for the full hour. And in this final segment, we are going to continue the sports talk because I have to admit this. Kevin told me this before we started the broadcast today, that we actually tuned into some UT softball over the weekend. I watched bits and pieces of Game 3 on Sunday to see if the Longhorn women, who are the number one national seed in this year's softball tournament, could, in fact, come back from losing the first game to A&M, being down in the second game, and win that series to punch their ticket to Oklahoma City. And sure enough, KD, they were able to do so. Kudos to the UT women for showing some serious grit there.
God, that was fun. I think one of the few things you and I both do well, at least combined, is that we're pretty colorblind and just everything blind when we watch something, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's a movie, sketch comedy, listen to a song, eat a meal, watch a game. And so I realized I like women's swimming and women's volleyball more than men's version of it. You know, I just do.
Yep.
I mean, and I'm doing it because you like them in the tight deal. No, I'm telling you, I like the actual sport more. The way it works with the court, parameters, athleticism, everything. And I probably have gotten that way with tennis to some degree. But, you know, softball took me a long time to really get on, like with the bases and everything. And you know, the three-hole hitters hitting 204. You know, the UT hitter's hitting 396 now. The nine-hole hitter is. It feels like there's balance in the sport, and there's athleticism, and there's a new generation of all these girls who are now young women who have been wanting to do this and have been a lot more been playing at a younger age and select ball and all that. And, man, I mean, some of the defensive plays they made, some of the power, some of the speed. You know, college softball, I've been saying it forever. College volleyball is one of my top four favorite sports, men or women. And I think college swimming's really good, but college softball's gotten a lot better, man. And just my aesthetic eyeball as a sports fan, no sex thing going on either way, men, women, baseball, softball, it's pretty watchable now. And I had a good time watching it, man. Good rivalry and good athleticism.
Yeah, I'm not going to act like I'm going to be tuning into softball regularly going forward, but
I didn't say I'm getting season tickets, Sam. All right.
But everything you just said is true. I can also admit that I've got a low threshold for adding new sports, and so sorry, softball, you're not making the cut right now. Although I've watched more college softball this year than I have college baseball, so take that for what you will.
And I'm pretty close, by the way. Can I ask you quickly, though, Someone who plays the sport at a pretty high level, We mock you, but you do. I've seen you play.
Yeah.
Don't you aesthetically, do you understand why I like women's volleyball more than men's volleyball?
Oh, completely. It's why, and it pisses people off every time I say this, but women's basketball will never reach its potential until it adjusts the parameters of the game in terms of the physical court for the physical capabilities of the women who are playing it. And I know that because volleyball does that. They have the nets the proper height for the women to where they can play above the net versus having to play below the net. The men's nets are higher. I would argue that the men's court and net, the court needs to be bigger, the net needs to be higher because the women's game is more enjoyable because the parameters are proper for the athleticism and the overall physical capabilities. Women's basketball would benefit from lowering the rim to 9 feet. At that point, they can probably play more above the rim. And look, I understand this is a pipe dream. It's never going to happen because the infrastructure is already built for basketball in this country. Every hoop just about in the country is 10 feet tall. So It's next to impossible that this is going to happen. But in an ideal world where you could change some things, you would actually make half the goals, because I would say that basketball is a 50-50 split at this point in terms of men and women playing it.
Yeah.
Half the goals be 9 feet tall, the other half be 10 feet. And that would make a marked difference in just how watchable and how entertaining women's basketball is game to game. And that's with how much more exciting the women's game has become over the last couple of years, thanks to the Caitlin Clarks of the world.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. But I mean, they're okay shooting. So you're just talking about dunking at that point and above the rim, which is what you said. So I get that.
Yeah, I mean, look,
I want to give us time to still get into baseball. Okay, come on here.
Okay, we can get into baseball for sure. I just want to say this. Yes, the fundamentals are better on the women's game right now. Like, that's one big thing that it has going for it. But the fact that you have what could be dunks going for layups, like there's something to that aesthetic that's not nearly as enjoyable. And I say that while also recognizing that the men's game has become too reliant on three-pointers and dunks. And that is also an issue, that there is a course correction that can bring that more back to the middle, and you can get more in the way of mid-range games. But for the women's game, look, it's at a very healthy place right now. I'm happy for the ladies for that. Let's talk college baseball, though.
Because hold on quickly, though. Yeah. I do want to say, though, that the funny thing is I think softball is getting to the point with the athleticism and skill level and power that they may need to expand the parameters and mainly base paths. There were 6 errors combined between A&M and Texas in the last game, and that was some really damn good defense at times. Because if you bobble one ball, if Bobby Witt Jr. or Corey Seager bobbles a ball a little bit and it trickles off, and a hard hit ball to him at short, right? He picks it up and throws it out by 3 feet. In softball, you're done. That's an error.
That, you know what? That's so a great point. You're right. You're right about that.
9 feet. Softball needs to expand it, or they're going to have to in the next 10 years, because this thing's exploded, and there are some big time athletes and some big time power offensively that are making 220 the right look like a joke.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I saw the same stat that you did about the girl in the bottom of the order for the Longhorns who's batting close to 400. It's like that's. Like, that's cool, but that also seems a little bit askew, too. So do you shrink the size of the ball a little bit? But you're probably right. It may be as simple as just having more distance between the bases. I don't know if you necessarily push the pitcher's mound back at all, but definitely putting more distance between the bases will affect that batting average.
15, 20 years in the time of history, and you and I study history from an overview, is a fart in time. It's a breath. And to go from 4-hole hitters who are hitting, 9 bombs or 10 bombs, and she's hitting 231 to 9-hole hitters hitting 396 with 3 bombs and 31 knocked in or whatever she has in and flashing a lot. Like, the sports move that way. So just understand parameters. You always have to look at that.
Yeah, and you also have to take into consideration that pitchers in softball don't need as much rest in between starts, too, because that underhand motion is much more natural than that overhand motion. So maybe that factors into things as well. All right, let's talk a little college baseball before we're done here, because the Texas baseball team, they go 2-barbecue at the Big 12 tournament last week. We discussed on Thursday that they were likely going to be headed to either Fayetteville to face Arkansas or College Station with a top-seeded A&M. A&M is the 3-seed in the national tournament, and Texas is a part of the 4-team bracket in College Station. What chances do you give the Longhorns of making it out of College Station and into a super regional?
Well, first off, I followed college baseball less than I have since I was probably 8 years old. So take that into account. But that still means, doesn't mean I'm not following it. So Louisiana is very tough. That'll be a very tough opening game. Texas has been so inconsistent, especially on the mound, that I would not put, who knows? I mean, they could win it. I highly doubt it because A&M's so good this year and so good at home. 3 losses, I believe, total. And Louisiana's good. So it's a really tough regional. So, I don't know what's going on with UT. They've been up and down all year. And, we'll find out. I mean, I've heard different stories about kind of what's going on with the team and emotionally, and none of it is overly bad, but I mean, they're obviously searching and trying to find out if they can pull all this together, because offensively, Trey, they're really good.
Yeah, but you need pitching to win in the postseason. That's maybe a bit of a cliche, but it's also very true in baseball come postseason time.
Yeah, and I think that's where David Pierce and some of the old Texas baseball heads who I talk to, I'm one of those guys now. we grew up with Gus and Augie, and we never had bad fundamentals, bad pitching. Like, all that was in place. If you didn't hit well, you didn't hit well. So I think that's probably part of the frustration, that you just didn't grow up kind of watching that for 30, 40 years. And it's kind of a sloppy team.
So if Texas were to go 0-2 in College Station, is David Pierce the coach of this baseball team for year one of the SEC?
Well, I mean, I have no idea. And not to dodge that, I would probably say yes, but I think there's a chance no. I think maybe some stuff internally they got to figure out, because they lost over coaching staff last year and Pierce was the pitching coach. Like, what happened with that? Like, what happened with Woody Williams? Like, so if you're CDC and you're the boss, you have to find out what's really going on internally, and maybe stuff will come out. Maybe you find stuff, maybe stuff doesn't, maybe you realize it's going in the right direction. We have to get you the right resources. I don't know, but my guess would be yes. But if he goes 0-2 after the Big 12 tournament and the up and down year, who knows? Going to a new conference, which is obviously the best conference.
With that, we're done with another Tuesday show, spending the full hour with Kevin Dunn. KD, thank you as always for the time.
Thank you, brother. Enjoy Chicago.
Will do. Thanks to you for listening. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. It's going to be a full hour with Justin Wells and Eric Nalin talking about a history of Inside Texas. My favorite insider site for Longhorn Sports should be yours as well. Until then, thank you so much for listening to today's show. Have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellen.